You are listening to WCJV Digital Broadcasting, Youngstown, New York.
The Paranormal News Insider from ParanewsInsider.com. Produced by WCJV Digital Broadcasting, Youngstown, New York.
Welcome to the Paranormal News Insider for the week of January 17th, 2017, and episode number 298. And this is your host, as always, Dr. Brian D. Parsons. Tonight, we have some really interesting stories. I think people are getting bored out there. This weird weather we've been having weird weather here in Northeast Ohio. I think all over the U.S., maybe even all over the world, people are just getting they're getting tired of winter already. It's only January. We got a ways to go here in the Northern Hemisphere. A couple more months. We'll be out of it soon. But some weird, wacky stories just coming out left and right. And tonight we're going to talk about Bigfoot tracked in the upper Midwest. Really interesting story. It's probably my favorite story of the week. Thylacine makes a comeback. There it is. And a goblin invades Reddit. And we're going to finally talk about it. It's been months in the making, maybe a year or so. I've gotten some hate mail over this story, but I'm going to talk about it finally tonight. Yes, the alien megastructure. The theory has been revised, and we'll talk about that tonight. Also, book of the week, a really good book tonight. You're not going to want to miss this one. It's pretty cool. It's got a little crime scene tape on the front of it, so you know it's got to be good stuff. This week's news is brought to you by the Thomas Francis University. Thomas Francis University is a metaphysics school that offers online spiritually based bachelor's, master's, and PhD doctoral metaphysical degrees, as well as single standalone courses in related metaphysical and esoteric topics. Instructors are easily accessible and offer world-class customer service and instruction. TFU and other ICMH schools have hundreds of students and graduates in more than 50 countries worldwide. For more information on Thomas Francis University, please visit tfuniversity.org. And I've had an interesting weekend this weekend. I've a couple of interesting things going on personally for as far as the paranormal is concerned, which I'll make a little bit of an announcement tonight. Well, in about 5 minutes or so. But as normal, we'll talk about the same things here. Got a lot of information this weekend for events on the events listing on the ParanewsInsider.com website. I appreciate everything that everyone has submitted to me, and I've made a few updates on that, so you might want to check it out if you're interested in getting to any of these events sometime this year. And I know it won't stop. It's going to continue all year long. Updating this this thing, it's an all year effort. It never stops. It's not like it's complete. The calendar is done. There'll be new events popping up for maybe even late spring, early summer, and especially for the fall and heading toward the winter. A lot of new stuff, hopefully coming out this year. Like I said, I've added a few more. I've got some other events that I'm gonna make time tonight. No matter what, I'm gonna talk about them. I'm gonna write a little note to myself. Stop early. Talk about events. Okay, good. Because I got a new one tonight that seems kind of cool. I want to talk about it. Reminds me of some stuff that I used to do. So we'll talk about that. But as always, if you have any information about any event and would like to hear it here, as well as see it on the website, let me know. Insider@ParanewsInsider.com or contact me through ParanewsInsider.com. There's a little about/contact link there. I think it's at the bottom of my leg there. It looks like I'm an amputee, but I'm not. I have two legs. And you can click on that link and contact me through the little website form thing there. So yeah, check them out. A lot of great events going on this year. And let's see, one I'll be doing, I want to mention this just because The St. Albans Sanatorium event, known as EnigmaCons, takes place May 19th through the 20th this year in Radford, Virginia. That's coming up fast already. EnigmaCons.com, EnigmaCons.com at the St. Albans Sanatorium. I still don't know what I'm going to be talking about. I might talk about cryptozoology, I guess, but it's a ghost event, so I'm going to be excited to be in a sanatorium. It's been a little while. A lot of people say that I should be back there again, all the time, permanently, on a nonstop basis. May, you know, sometimes I agree, especially when I'm at work. I feel like I'm either in a sanatorium or I should be locked up into one after dealing with certain people. But anyway, yes, looking forward to that event, getting out to a ghost hunting venue. A good friend of mine, Nick, is bugging me constantly to get my butt in gear. Let's get out to investigate some of these places. So it'll be fun. Either way, it's on the calendar. The Pennsylvania Bigfoot Camping Adventure. Yes, it's back. May 5th through the 7th. A couple weekends before St. Albans for me. It's going to be a fun month. Not as fun as April. You'll find more about that coming up. But that's kind of a more personal thing. But anyway, Pennsylvania Bigfoot Camping Adventure. Steve Coles, Stan Gordon, and myself, returning as speakers, Jay Baterchin, Rosemary Ellen Guiley, and author Ronald L. Murphy. He just released a new book today. They're all on the speakers list. It's going to be a great event. You're going to be able to get out in the woods with those of us that have been investigated Bigfoot, people with a lot more knowledge than I have, but I like to lead people around and teach them and train them about some of the nature things and how to track animals and what to look for, what to hear. What to listen for, I should say. And I learn as well. I learn from a lot of other people. Kenny Biddle will probably be there. He's a skeptic, but he's a great guy. Lots of interesting people to show up to this thing. Lots of great people were there last year, and I'm sure it's going to be that way again this year. And again, you're going to have speakers, but you're also going to have between the speakers, they're going to do some workshops. They're going to teach you how to do some of the stuff that we do out in the field, some of the research techniques or casting prints and things like that. And we'll also take you out for hikes. That's really the fun part. I really enjoyed that last year. Looking forward to that this year. The Pennsylvania Bigfoot Camping Adventure, the adventure of a lifetime. Yeah, I know. That's not what that's what they say. But personally, you know what I think it should say. It should say, the Pennsylvania Bigfoot Camping Adventure, it will be intense, because we're going to be intense. We're going to be camping out. I know I'm going to say that every day until the event's over. Even after the event's over, I might say that again. It's funny. I think it's great. No reaction from Eric Altman. Eric is the host of that. I don't think he thinks it's funny. It's not on the T-shirts that Jay Baterchin has designed, but I think it's great. It's intense. Anyway. Speaking of Eric Altman, it was supposed to be on Beyond the Edge Radio back on January 15th, but we had some technical difficulty. I think the same thing happened the last time I was supposed to be on the show. Maybe it's me. I don't know. I sacrificed a chicken every night before coming out on this show to these Skype gods. Prance around in a Skype t-shirt. It's a cut-off t-shirt, so I can't show you a picture. Whatever I have to do to make sure that the Skype gods are happy, I do it. So I don't know what went wrong, but hopefully I'll be rescheduled on that show on Beyond the Edge Radio pretty soon. It's good to talk to Eric. Great guy. And he's got his hands full with this Pennsylvania Bigfoot Camping Adventure thing. It's a lot of work, but I think it's going to be a great time. Looking forward to that. So this year I'm going to be at a couple of ghost events from the St. Albans Sanatorium event in May. And I'll also be returning for my 9th annual Westerville Public Library appearance. This year, it's going to be on October 23rd in October. Wow, that's coming up 9 months away. Okay. So another two ghost things looking forward to. That's great. That's great. And the cryptid event, obviously, I just mentioned like 10 times, the Pennsylvania Bigfoot Camping Adventure. So I guess all I need is a UFO conference to speak at. Last year, I did attend the, I did attend the Kecksburg UFO Festival, and that was about it. But I need to speak at one this year. So guess what? Yes, big announcement. I've been asked by Stan Gordon to speak at this year's Kecksburg UFO Festival in Kecksburg, Pennsylvania. I'm really excited about this. This is great. I had a really fun time last year with this. It's beyond anything you'll ever see at any type of paranormal conference. I'm talking carnival rides. I'm talking carnival food. I'm talking a burnout contest, which I watched this burnout contest for like an hour and a half. It was enthralling. They have a bathroom or a bathtub race. Little kids do tractor pulls. It's just a really good time. There's just so many people there. It's so entertaining. And it's weird because it's out in the middle of nowhere. Celebrating the Kecksburg UFO crash. And I'll tell you what, it's a great time. A lot of people are there. It's in the end of July. So it's really, 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 really hot. But it's a lot of fun. So I'll get more details, more information about that event. It's still kind of being put together as far as the speakers are concerned. Waiting on some other people to confirm that they're going to be speaking at this event before any other major announcements are made. But I know I will be there. July 28th through the 30th, Kecksburg, Pennsylvania. It's unlike anything you've ever seen. Trust me. It's really fun. It was I stayed there all weekend. I camped out down the road a piece, I guess, and drove up to the event. Didn't hit any deer there, but it was a lot of fun. So anyway, with that being said, we're going to jump into some paranormal news, some weird stories, some interesting stories, and we'll start off in cryptid news with my favorite story of the week. It's kind of weird. It's kind of interesting at the same time. And let me get the link here, and I'm going to throw this in the chat room for everybody that's live in the chat room. You're going to get this information. Feel free to listen in. If you're listening in live, you can jump into the chat room and join along with the faithful that are in the chat room each and every week, causing trouble, sharing information, talking about the things that I'm talking about, and a great group of people. It's a lot of fun. But if you're just listening and you're just listening to listen, then listen. I have no problem with that. It's cool. Get it. But if you're in the chat room, you're going to get some other information. Time to time, I do put together some stuff and put links in from my website, theparanewsinsider.com, and you get some inside information on some of these stories in addition to the links. Now, if you miss the links, you're not live in the chat room. You can catch the majority of the links. I try to get everything that I talk about, anything that with a link, I try to post during the week after the show. So you can research that as well, and you can see the information that I'm providing you, because it goes just beyond like the headlines that you're going to see on some of these paranormal paranormal news sites that just kind of regurgitate the information, or they get one link and they throw it out there. I look for, as much as I can, the source of any of these stories or a source that has the best information that's going to help you really understand these stories. And we're going to start tonight with the first big Bigfoot story of the year. And it takes place in Ellendale, Ellendale, North Dakota. One would expect North Carolina, but North Dakota? This time of the year? No, that can't be right. That's right, North Dakota. The small town is less than 5 miles north of the South Dakota border. And the surrounding area is mostly flat with farms and grasslands. But there are some hills and apparently a Bigfoot as well running around. Now, Christopher Bauer says that a friend of his contacted him after she saw a hairy creature outside of her window of the encounter. Bauer said, quote, she described him as a huge, hairy, ugly monster. It's a couple of people I know. And I guess that kind of describes it. If a Sasquatch is looking through a window at you, that's how I'd describe him too, unquote. Well, Bauer then found prints of what the woman saw, and he tracked the animal for 7 miles. Now, at this point, I was reading the story. There was a video, but I wanted to read through the story first. I was very skeptical at this point. It sounds just too convenient. Friend contacts me kind of story, and I find a track, and I track this thing. Come on. It didn't sit well with me, but I read the rest of the story. I watched the video. And I, you know, this is a really interesting story. I'm not so skeptical of this one. I think this is really, really interesting. I thought 7 miles, I figured it was an exaggeration. I mean, maybe the guy walked like a half mile and was like, well, that was 7 miles. But upon really researching this and reading it and watching the video, I realized that I think this guy is on the level. I think he's being truthful. A Bauer is an experienced trapper, and he photographed numerous prints and studied the stride length and other sign that the creature left. He is convinced that this was not a person and seems to know a thing or two about Bigfoot. As he says in the WDAY NBC interview, quote, it's a Bigfoot, Sasquatch, Gigantopithecus, whatever you want to call him. He's a real animal. He's here, and I want people to know, unquote. Well, the tracks were 18 inches long by 8 inches wide, and the creature had a 4-foot stride. Bauer said the tracks were deep in the snow, so it made it very easy to track. A 7-mile long track is pretty impressive, but winter conditions are always a prime time to see the tracks of any type of creature. Bauer says that the tracks are too perfect to be a hoax. And I think what he means by too perfect is that they're probably just like normal feet and they're not fake boards or rubber shoes. And there's a lot of diversity in each step. I mean, I don't know. I'm just kind of guessing from what he's saying that they're too perfect. So could this be for real? Well, Bauer seems to think so. And the best line of the interview he says is, quote, the truth is out there. It's there. I know he is. I tracked him, unquote. I want that on a t-shirt. Bauer sent tracks to who is referred to as a Bigfoot expert at the University of Idaho, who says that the tracks look promising. Well, we can obviously assume that this Bigfoot expert at the University of Idaho is none other than Dr. Jeff Meldrum. Well, Bauer does hope that someone is able to get video evidence of the creature, but also hopes that no harm comes to it. Well, personally, I think I see an episode of Finding Bigfoot coming out of this one. And the fact that Bauer seems to know a lot about Bigfoot, and he assumes it's this creature without any other potential explanation, is really the only thing that kind of bothers me about this. I don't know, but 7 miles, that's pretty impressive. And I don't think, it would be really crazy for somebody to be wandering around 7 miles in a Bigfoot costume. I mean, I'm always looking for an explanation to these stories, but if this is a hoax, it's pretty elaborate. But we're still going to have to wait and see if anything else comes and it unfolds before coming to any conclusion. So for the time being, this is probably the best evidence in a while of the trail of a potential Bigfoot. And I do have to say another thing that kind of bothers me is this is probably the third story in maybe a year, year and a half or so, where there's been numerous miles of a trail of a Bigfoot. And you may think, well, yeah, he's a big animal. It's a big creature. It's got big feet. It's really heavy. So it should be leaving tracks that would last pretty far. We should be able to track. And I've always thought that myself. Until I started to learn how to track animals myself. And it's not as easy as you think. And it doesn't take much to lose a creature, to lose an animal, even in snow. Different conditions can change, and you're still behind the animal. The animal's out in front of you, and you may have been there 10 hours ago, 20 hours ago, and you're behind it. And as long as you're gaining ground, you're catching up. So you'd think the track should be fresher, but it's not always the case. All kinds of things can interfere with that, especially in the winter. More snow, warmer conditions, other types of precipitation if it starts raining, or if the wind picks up, it can cover the tracks. So snow is your best friend, but it's also your worst enemy. And it can also make tracks appear much, much larger if it does perhaps get warmer in an area. If you're down in a kind of a depressed area, a lower area, it may actually be warmer in that area than it would be in an area with a lot of wind. So that could affect the size of the tracks, because you may know if the snow starts to melt with a footprint, it's going to make the footprint appear larger than what it was when it was initially created. So there's a lot of factors, a lot of things that go into tracking an animal, especially for 7 miles. It's very impressive. And he says that toward the end of this, he saw where this creature kicked some snow and reached down and grabbed what he thinks is potentially a mouse or a vole or something, maybe as a, evening snack or something. I don't know. But I found that to be interesting as well, that he was really, really talking about reading the sign of these creatures. But I don't know. Again, I've heard a few stories like this where people have followed a Bigfoot-like creature for numerous miles. And unfortunately, nothing has come from those either. So I don't know. It's still an interesting story, and it's one that I'm going to keep a sharp eye on to see if anything develops or if anything changes or anything updates on this, and keep my eye on Christopher Bauer to see what he's up to. And if he invites Matt Moneymaker and the crew of Finding Bigfoot out there to film out there, I think that's going to be a pretty good episode. And I might actually watch it. I don't know. We'll see. Not making any promises. So the thylacine, second story tonight is about the thylacine. Yeah, he's back in the news again. You may remember the thylacine was a pretty popular news story last year, a few times with a few different stories. We talked about it and how there's a group that thinks that the thylacine still exists in Australia. And they've collected all these videos and they were slowly putting one video out at a time, just trying to generate some interest and some maybe some income and obviously some attention to this to get other people on board to see whether or not they could get more information about the thylacine being out there. And throw the link in the chat room there before I forget. Yeah, so the thylacine is back in the news again. And yeah, I don't know how many, what was it, three sightings or three videos that were released, and they were all from years prior. And it is as interesting as it was, and I really like the thylacine story. I think that if any animal that is said to be extinct in this day and age is to be found, a large creature, I should say, is to be found, I think the thylacine is very, very high on that list to a certain extent. And I'll explain that certain extent here as we talk through the story. But as popular as it was, it failed to crack the top 10 paranormal news stories of 2016. But this year, a woman has come forward with another video that she took back in September of 2015. Just kind of depressing. I wish somebody would, find a current video so people could get out there and, research this area and look around, try to find some prints or at least look for a location where this animal might have gone to. So September of 2015, of what she feels is definitive proof that the thylacine, or Tasmanian tiger, is not extinct. Now, she filmed the video at 8:45 a.m. on that September morning as she sat and watched kangaroos on her property. That sounds exciting, sitting in a little chair, drinking lemonade, watching kangaroos. Sounds like a good life. When all of a sudden, this strange animal captured her attention. Many people feel that the shaky video is just a fox, and it's really blurry because it's just how it is. It's a cell phone video. A lot of people think it's just a fox or other explainable animal. The woman stated on her YouTube video channel, which is where she posted this, quote, "No, it was not a dog, cat, fox, or whatever. It was something else. It had a large head with pointy ears. It's sort of had an arched back, a bum like a kangaroo's, and a long, skinny, stiff tail. And it had bright orangey brown fur," unquote. And I think that's pretty much the first time that I've ever said the word bum in regards to a part of the anatomy. Anyway, as for the shaky video, it was admitted that she wasn't it wasn't very great. She wasn't good at filming it, and that it was done on her cell phone, which she couldn't zoom in with. She said, quote, "I was shaken and excited and filled with all kinds of feelings. When I was doing this, I just wanted to get it on camera no matter what," unquote. The video was filmed in Burpengary, Queensland, Australia, just north of Brisbane, on the east coast of the continent. Well, the big issue here that I see with this thylacine video is the fact that it was filmed in Queensland, Australia. that's on the mainland. And yeah, it's a huge continent. I mean, it's huge. It's huge. Make Texas look small. But the thylacine has not been documented on the mainland for about 2,000 years. 2,000 years. That's quite a long time for a large creature like this to be absent, to not be documented, to not be seen. I mean, yeah, I realize it's a big continent. It's huge. It's a big country. But the carnivorous marsupial is what it is. It eats meat. It's a marsupial. It lived in Tasmania until its extinction in 1936, when sadly the last known specimen died in the Hobart Zoo. We've talked about that I don't know how many times. Poor guy. He was left out, accidentally locked out of his inside enclosure and died of exposure at the Hobart Zoo. Whoops. But that guy was fired. 1936. So that it had pretty much disappeared in Tasmania prior to that, due to hunting and due to just a lot of other things. Unfortunately, that just kind of culminated in its extinction. But again, 2,000 years, it's not been seen in mainland Australia. So I'm kind of skeptical about these videos when they pop up about the mainland thylacine. I just don't see it. I want to believe, I really do, but not there, just not there. I just don't see it. And with the video, again, it's just like it's the blob squatch. It's really blurry. It's just this creature that's jumping around. It does look dog-like. I mean, it could be a thylacine, but it could also, again, be a dog, a cat, or a fox, or anything else. I don't know how she says it wasn't. Orangey brown fur really does describe a fox. It could even be a dog. So we don't know. It's just another mystery. And unfortunately, there has been no subsequent sightings of this creature in the area since her video back in September of 2015. So we'll keep an eye out. I'm sure that the that group that releases videos on thylacines, now that this story has broke, probably be only a matter of time that they'll release something. I didn't see them associated with this story, but I only read a couple of links here. One was from the Daily Mail. The other was from an Australian news company. I can't find the link, but I really didn't read too much more. I didn't see this group of these thylacine people trying to claim this is something that they did or trying to get put out there in the public. But again, I really would not think that we're going to wait too much longer for another video of the thylacine to be pushed out there. But man, they better get better than this. This is like the third one. The one last year was pretty interesting, where it was by a trash can, by somebody's house or their garage. It looked kind of cool. It looked kind of realistic, but again, nothing really solid. No blood, no DNA, no body, no solid photograph, no close-up video, no nothing. Nothing in focus, nothing that's not shaky, nothing that's not in complete pitch black. Still waiting, folks. But again, I do think, I am confident that if we do discover any animal that is thought to be or said to be extinct, the thylacine is more than likely the one. But that's not going to happen in Australia. It's going to happen down in Tasmania. So we got another story here, a cryptozoology story. I'm not sure where I don't think I should have put this in cryptozoology. The more I'm thinking about it here, it's a weird picture, and it's I don't know. It's a viral picture, and it comes from Reddit. And I'm not really sold on this one. I'm not sold on Reddit, period. I think Reddit is it's kind of gone downhill, and there's some issues here about Reddit that we're going to talk about real quick. But before I start the story, I just want to let you know that you're listening to WCJV Digital Broadcasting from Youngstown, New York, emanating live at WCJVRadio.com, and you're currently listening to the Paranormal News Insider with your host, Dr. Brian D. Parsons. And we're talking cryptozoology. And this one comes from The Sun, not that Sun. The Sun, it's an online newspaper from the United Kingdom. But it also comes from Reddit. If you're not familiar with Reddit, it's a, it's an interesting source of news and information. It's all just kind of just people. It's like a big message board type of thing just put together by all sorts of people that all kinds of topics, you name it, from workplaces to news stories to stuff like this that we're going to talk about. And Reddit is just it's grown. It's a big monster. And this isn't the first viral photograph that's shown up even this year. There's a number of them. Some of them aren't paranormal. Some are just weird, wacky stuff. But I've noticed this is becoming a trend here, coming from Reddit. Now, this photograph was actually taken last year and was supposedly shot by a guy who was taking subsequent photographs of the moon. I guess that's – I don't know. Of the moon. Now, there were two photographs, and in one of the photos, it's just a normal picture of looks like a little park, and you see a pole there, electrical pole, and you see a light, and you see the moon between the pole and a tree, and you see some grass, some other trees. It's kind of a weird picture. I don't know why you would take a picture like, if you're trying to take a picture of the moon and you're out in a park, I don't know why you'd set yourself up at that particular angle. It just kind of doesn't make sense for the most part. I don't know. I wasn't there, but it just looks, it just feels wrong as a photographer myself. I don't think I would have done it that way. But in the second photo that was shown, there is a weird looking creature running across the grass. At least we think it's a creature. It's just like this blob. It's really hard to discern. I mean, I've blown it up. I've tried different photo techniques to isolate this thing to make it more clear, and nothing seems to work. Now, of course, with this story, this person supposedly, well, he didn't take this picture. This guy was asked by this elderly couple who supposedly had this picture to identify what was in the pictures. And of course, these elderly people had no idea what Photoshop was. Of course they didn't. They don't know what that is. Nobody does. It's only been out for 20 some odd years. Who's ever heard of Photoshop? They've never heard of any other digital editing software either, which I don't know. Even, I mean, come on, older people, 20 years, it's stuff's been out for a long time. Even your camera comes with editing software. I don't know. I don't know if I'm buying that part, to be honest with you. Well, anyway, the Reddit user, his name is Me Tarzan Eugene. Okay. He posted this and is actually been actively searching for a logical conclusion, asking questions, and following up on the photograph. It's interesting to watch this. But he seems pretty dismissive about anything camera-related. There's been some really interesting stuff that's been offered to him, but he's says no pretty much to everything because there's a shadow and there's an opaqueness to the object. I don't know. It looks Photoshop to me. It just looks really simple. And people are scratching their heads. There's a lot of people working on these photographs. I've kind of given up on it because it's really insignificant to me. Who cares really what's in it? It could be an owl. It could be a bird. It could be a cat. It could be just regular camera shake, exposure, something moving. It could be a leaf falling. Who knows? It could be anything. It could be an alien creature. But odds are, more than likely, it's just a hoax. It's probably going to disappear into the vast space of other questionable photographs of purported strange beasts that have turned up all over the internet. Even if a photographic explanation is given, there will always be an argument unless the results can be duplicated. And I agree with that. They should go out there and try to duplicate this. Now, I'm not a fan of Reddit, especially with these viral photographs. And again, they seem to be popping up everywhere on Reddit. Well, it seems there's I guess there's like awards you can win, and there's a point scale for the number of thumbs up you can get. on a story or a photograph. There's a lot of viral stuff coming out through Reddit because of this. And I think it's just people are just trying to get attention, 15 minutes of fame. So I think I really do. I think this was just created for attention. You know, and some people have gotten really creative. There's some really interesting stuff. I was kind of breezing through Reddit after reading this story, looking for similar stories, looking for similar photographs, some weird stuff all over Reddit. And it seems that people are getting really creative with this stuff. It's different stories, different viral things that they've stolen from other areas, and people posting it as their own information. And we'll probably never know, since this person who posted it, well, they haven't been on their account for a while. They were following up on this picture, but suddenly they've just kind of dropped off the planet. And I'm thinking they created it to get some quick attention before heading back to Realityville. And they got what they wanted. And I've seen this with a couple of viral stories, big viral stories that have broken through Reddit, pictures and memes and things that people have done. All of a sudden, those people just disappeared. Like, they were all over these stories and then poof, gone. So anyway, I don't know. I don't hold much stock in it. And I'll be posting that picture on the Paranews Insider Facebook site, so you can check that out yourself. And you be the judge. I mean, if you want to really dig into that, you want to take the time, go right ahead. I'm done with it. It's not worth it to me. I don't think we're going to figure out anything unless we're able to, again, go out to that location or get different angles of this area to kind of figure out maybe what could have caused that. But it's not really that big of a deal. Don't waste your time. Now let's jump to UFO news. This is a big story here. The alien megastructure. People have been bugging me for a long time since the story broke, well over a year ago, last fall I think the story broke. People have been bugging me. Why aren't you talking about the alien megastructure? I don't know if that's what they sounded like, but that's kind of what I hear in my head when I read some of these emails about this alien megastructure. Not all the emails. Some of them are really nice sounding. But this alien megastructure, weird story, and you probably read about this, but you probably read some really hokey misinformation about it. And, you know, I don't know why I put it in the UFO news. It's not necessarily alien or even dealing with UFOs, but it's received a lot of attention due to the fact that scientists, those guys with the white lab coats, the glasses, the pocket protectors, the fancy books, they came up with a hypothesis that aliens might have had a hand in this story. They came up with it. Scientists, they're the ones that said it, which is weird. And again, this is a story I ignored when it first came out. I realized that there had to be something more rational to this. But it's weird because then all the conspiracy theorists, all the UFO people, they really jumped on this story and they really made it kind of bigger than what it should have been. But it was really interesting to see this kind of get torn apart. And it all began in October of 2015 when astronomers announced that a star named KIC 8462852, there's a test later, it's also known as Tabby's star, was exhibiting some strange behavior that's never been observed before. You'd think we'd seen it all these stars in the sky. You think we'd seen all kind of rational and irrational behavior. I mean, how does a star supposed to behave, really? Well, the star was displaying massive dimming over time, about 17% in brightness over 100 years, and seemed to flicker in brightness. And what it means, like flicker, you might think of scintillation when you're looking at stars, when you're outside and you're looking up and you see the little flickering. Well, that's scintillation. That's due to, part atmosphere, but also because of the massive distance between us and the star. I mean, just think, yes, space is vast and it's mostly empty, but there's a lot of junk floating around. And if anything, between us and millions of miles, light years, hundreds of light years, thousands of light years, anything were to cross between us and that light, it's going to create the flicker. That's what you're seeing. But yes, it's also part atmosphere. And if you planets don't scintillate as much as stars. So it's kind of a little bit of a validation that it is the distance involved. But this is completely different in regards to KIC 8462852. The brightness has changed, and sometimes it's a little bit brighter, a little bit dimmer, and flickers. It's just completely unnatural from how normal stars act. Now, the data was found, granted, 100 years ago. How did they do that? Well, the data was found from plates that were taken of the sky from the late 1800s. Yeah, they keep data. They keep information about the sky in these little underground bunkers all over the place. And they're able to take these plates, these photographs, and they're able to compare to recent data and data over time. Now, there's been some issues with that I'm not going to get involved with about that data and whether it was correct or whether the information was gathered correctly, or maybe our technology is a little bit better than obviously than it was in the 1800s, that maybe that's the problem here. But anyway, the Kepler Space Observatory also noted a 3% dip in the last 4 years of observation of the star. Now, the star was becoming dimmer over time, and astronomers and scientists had no idea. Nobody could figure this out. What would cause this? As again, it's never been observed before. So what do you think? Must be aliens, right? I mean, that's what a lot of people would say. It's got to be aliens. They thought it could be comets or debris field. And if that would have been all they said, then the story kind of would have disappeared into the backdrop with a lot of the other space stories that are coming out or that came out a couple of years ago. But it was that guess. It was the guess that was given out that made this story a little bit more popular than what it should have been, especially paranormal. Astronomers who had sifted through data collected by the Kepler Space Observatory gave the suggestion that maybe SETI, yes, that's SETI, the Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence, well, they might want to point their telescopes in that direction. Well, what are you guys saying? Well, their thought is that maybe, just maybe, this dimming star is caused by an alien megastructure being built around the star. Well, interesting theory. Well, any guess should be explored, I guess. You know, as a scientist, you should consider every angle, every possibility, right? Although the alien megastructure guess would be probably pretty far down the list of possibilities, it did attract the attention of every paranormal and conspiracy blogger in the world who made this out to be the leading theory. Now, the star itself is located about 1,480 light years away in the constellation Cygnus. Now, if it was comets, which is one of the leading theories at the time, it would have to have about 650,000 comets surrounding it, estimated, of course, to cause the dimming, and it wouldn't really explain the consistent dimming over time. It just doesn't make any sense. Now, the guess of the alien megastructure was just that. It was a guess. It was based on the work of Freeman Dyson, who theorized that a world with escalating needs due to the rising technology would – I mean, what else would you do? Rising technology, you're going to have to eventually directly tap a star for power. I guess that's on our list, you know, once we do everything that we do to this planet. Thus, developing it with a ring, a bubble, or even a shell to harness the power given off for their particular needs. Well, that was a great theory, but now a team of researchers from Columbia University and the University of California, Berkeley, have come up with a guess that has a little bit more merit than an alien megastructure or even a comet debris field. These researchers felt that the star consumed a planet or even a number of planets and moons, possibly as far back as 10,000 years ago. Now, this act of consuming planets and moons would have caused a flare, and that the star is slowly recovering from that consumption. It would also leave it a debris field, which would also explain the flickering. Granted, you know, think about it, slowly recovering. It's kind of a relative term to our perspective. And the fact that the star is 1,500 light years away, it's probably hunger again, right? Just kidding. It's more than likely stabilized in brightness, yet we will not observe this for quite a while. So it's our perspective from here on Earth as to where the star is. But with some more observation time, astronomers will either find this as a plausible explanation or will yet find another reason to define why the star is acting the way it is. Maybe aliens. As far as the alien megastructure, I'm surprised that scientists would have said this to begin with. But, I mean, you have to admit, it is somewhat exciting that the prospect of intelligent life being out there isn't left for those of us who dream of outlandish claims of paranormal phenomena. And it's finally crept into the mainstream science. So for them to actually say that, you know, I don't mean to make fun of them, but it should actually be a very positive thing. I think it's a good step not for UFOs per se, but for those of us that believe in the potential alien life out there, for scientists to even consider that. I mean, years ago, they would have been laughed at. They would have probably lost their funding, lost their jobs, and different things like that. So that's your news for the week. Now, we're going to talk about the book of the week. I'm excited about this one. I got this book back in November of last year at the Ghost Excavation Conference in Bedford, Pennsylvania, which was not a good time as far as my car was concerned, because I hit a deer. I lost my car for 33 days, but it was a great time because I met a lot of great people with a lot of good information, and I got my hands on this book, and I've heard about this thing for quite a while, and was told that there was a book coming out, and was waiting for this, and I finally got my hands on this book, and this is some pretty interesting stuff. It's maybe not for everybody, but I think this is a really good book. And if you're into this sort of subject with dealing with ghosts, you might like it. All right. So just threw the link there in the chat room. I'm going to throw the picture of the cover of this book in the chat room as well, so you guys can see what this book is. The book is called Paraforensics. Paraforensics. Paraforensic Archaeological Approaches to Uncovering Spiritual Evidence. This book is written by Jonathan Williams. It's a very interesting concept. And I guess I'll start out with, I'll repeat the book again. Paraforensic Archaeological Approaches to Uncovering Spiritual Evidence by Jonathan Williams, our book of the week this week. And I'll start out by saying that I do know Jonathan. I consider him a friend, a colleague. We've worked together on the field. Very knowledgeable. Could say young man, but I think we're about the same age. Well, I'll call him young man then. I met him years ago through John Sable, who is known as the Ghost Excavator. He wrote the book of the week that we talked about last week here on the show. I speak on the subject of paraforensics a couple of times. And like the E4 method, Jonathan's borrowed a little bit from John Sable. And one thing we both have in common is that we're the only two people, Jonathan and myself, who are allowed to use the ghost excavation methodology in our work. We've been granted the rights by John Sable to utilize that in our specific works, as long as obviously it's cited to him and that work is acknowledged, which we've done a number of times. Now, Jonathan has an extensive background in law enforcement, stemming back to even before high school. He's been involved in a number of programs with law enforcement. He served as a civilian and military law enforcement official and continues to work in the private sector dealing with domestic terrorist threats. Jonathan started in the ghost field back in 1997 and eventually worked with a guy named Dave Giuliano, you might know him, and he helped form the South Jersey Ghost Research, which is one of the most well-known and respected groups back in that time frame. I remember constantly following that group. They were one of the ones to look up to, especially there on the East Coast. So very familiar with that group. Now, Jonathan has since formed a few other groups after developing his paraforensics methodology in 2010. Then he formed the Soul Trackers Paranormal Forensics Group as a way to aid in police cold cases and locate missing persons. Now, this book outlines Jonathan's paraforensic methodology, which essentially, here in the book, it says it uses three basic steps within the process. Now, granted, there's a lot of knowledge of forensics that one should have before getting into this methodology, and this book, it does provide a lot of information about forensics. I wasn't sure how much there was when I got the book, and then I started reading through it and reading about the methodology. Then all this forensic stuff came pouring out, and I'm a big fan of many forensic techniques, And matter of fact, I was watching Forensic Files tonight. I'm pretty sure I'm probably on some list somewhere since I watched that show so much. I'm sure somebody's watching me somewhere. This book has plenty of good information for anyone who wants to understand more about forensics, let alone the ghost research aspect of this, of the paraforensics methodology. Now, also to note, when I was listening to him speak, I was taking notes on his methodology, and some kind of questions popped up that I don't really want to ask until I really read the book, just to kind of understand everything. And you have to consider there's a lot of legal things about this to understand, such as dealing with an active crime scene, contacting law enforcement at particular stages of your personal investigations, as maybe as well as before beginning any kind of investigation, dealing with a cold case or a murder or anything like that, especially missing persons, anything ongoing, and understanding the living and how they might react to this process, and keeping information private about names and dates and different things. Now, forensics essentially is the process of using various tests or techniques. We've heard, probably seen these shows, CSI and all that stuff, where they do chemical tests, or they look at skid marks and reenact things, and they use ballistic jelly to shoot things and all this fun stuff. But it's not always fun. There's a lot of work, a lot of science that goes into this stuff. So it's the process of using various tests or techniques to determine information about a crime, what happened. With paraforensics, one is using the crime scene and those involved to find residual or intelligent interactive paranormal information from the environment. So it's essentially a bridge between a criminologist and a paranormal investigation to help assist with a variety of crimes. It's simple, but it's almost kind of hard to explain at the same time. But if you do get this book, and I highly recommend it, if you're interested in anything with police work and ghost work, ghost investigations, this is, even if you're not really thinking about implementing this with your particular paranormal group, you're still going to learn some good stuff about the investigation process. There's a lot of talk about tools and techniques of using tools, documentation, methods. Some stuff I might be shamelessly stealing from this book for use in future work in the ghost field. Don't be ashamed about that. It's good to borrow things from other people. So there's a lot of great information in this book. And if you do get the book, you will be treated to a very special photograph, a wonderful photo of John Sable, Jonathan Williams, and yours truly during a ghost excavation. And we're also filming a fizzle reel at the Daniel Lady Farm in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania. Let me see, when did this thing come out? 2014. So it hasn't been out too long. It's not that thick. It's only 120 pages. It seems like a lot more than that. There's some really interesting things left in the back of the book, a lot of logs and different forms that are really good, really, really good stuff, and some outlines of how to do some of this stuff. So this book it's packed. And when I read this book, it seemed like a heck of a lot more than 120 pages. It was a ton of information. And again, there's a lot of good stuff there that I'm going to be taking for use for out in the field doing ghost research. So again, Paraforensic Archaeological Approaches to Uncovering Spiritual Evidence by Jonathan Williams, this week's Book of the Week. And a great book, I think. Not just because I know John, not just because I've met him and worked with him and heard his work with this book, but I do think it does have an application in the field, maybe not now, but maybe in the future. And again, there's a lot of different things that you need to consider if you do want to get into this, but I do think that it does have a future in it, especially when you consider that the paranormal stuff is starting to become mainstream. And if we start to learn more about consciousness, and we can define consciousness, and scientists can understand how residual energy works as far as memories and things like that, it's really not too far-fetched that things like this could eventually be admissible in court. I really don't think you know, maybe 20 years or so down the road, because it, again, it depends on what's going on with the professionals dealing with the brain and the mind, two separate things, again, that hopefully all that stuff will come together. And I do think that eventually this will be a big deal. And Jonathan has paved that path. It started that journey for other people to hopefully use this process and maybe put it into practical reality someday. So yes, I wanted to saw my little note here that it remind myself to stop, give myself a couple minutes to talk about the events page. Yes, if you go to paranewsinsider.com, click on the events tab at the top, be treated to another photograph of myself and John Sable. Wow, that one is old. That's from 2009, the Ohio Paranormal Convention. I think that's 2009. Yeah, well, either way, Ohio Paranormal Convention of John and I together. The listing, I just updated it today. I updated some stuff yesterday. I've added a couple of paranormal classes. I essentially have four, I guess you could say, four different distinct things: ghost conferences, conventions, UFO events, and cryptozoology events. And I've added some paranormal classes, tours, and guided hunts. These are things that are not repetitive and that are not really necessarily a conference or a convention. Maybe they're doing a little class or something, but it's not having a lot of guests. Because I know there's a lot of these, and I used to do these things myself years ago with my group, until I kind of felt guilty about trying to raise money through that for our own purposes. But anyway, a couple of them here on that list, one of them which was submitted by Audrey Hamilton, who is a frequent chat room attendee, as well as the provider for me to the MUFON sighting statistics for the month, because I usually get them halfway through the month, and it's good to have them at the beginning of the month. This one is a live Skype interview with Nick Redford at the Airy MUFON, which is Mutual UFO Network meetup group, and that's taking place on Tuesday, January 31st at 7 p.m. Now, kind of conflicted here, because I want you to go. But at the same time, I want you to know that that night, if all goes well, that is my 300th show. But Nick is a great guy. So if you do get a chance, you're in the area, go to that. My show is recorded. This is a once, maybe in a once in a lifetime chance. I mean, you might get to see Nick Redfern somewhere sometime. But he's a great person to watch, to listen to. He always does a great interview. Whether it's live or on Skype or anywhere, he's full of so much knowledge. It's great. And the best thing about this thing, it's free to the public. It takes place in Airy, Pennsylvania, downtown. And Nick's going to be talking about a variety of topics. There's going to be, you can read a little bit more about it. There's information on here, the address and everything. There's a Facebook event site as well. You can check out more information about that. And one event that I really want to mention too, just got handed to me today, got the email later this afternoon. It's called Ghosts Among Our Graves, and it takes place Friday, May 5th at 7 p.m. And it's taking place at the Laurel Hill Cemetery Gatehouse in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. That sounds exciting. That sounds interesting. Free spirit paranormal investigators who have conducted numerous investigations of historic Laurel Hill Cemetery in search of answers to a variety of paranormal questions. Join them for this unique event as they cover some of the basics in the field of ghost hunting. Participants will then have the opportunity to experiment firsthand with ghost hunting equipment while joining the FSPI team leaders on group investigations of some of the cemetery's most reportedly active sections. Now, after the hunt, refuel with complimentary snacks and refreshments. That's a necessary thing. You got to have pizza. You got to have snacks. And it's a pretty decent cost, $40 per person, general admission. Again, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. So if you're interested in that, it sounds like a unique intro. If you're interested in getting into the ghost field and you really haven't been out on any kind of things like this, highly recommend stuff like this, Ghosts Among Our Graves. Check that out at paranewsinsider.com. click on the events tab at the top. Wow, this weekend, the Yuma Prison Paracon 2017, January 20th through the 22nd, Yuma, Arizona. It's already here. Wow. Squatch Fest takes place January 27th, 2017 in Longview, Washington. Our first big cryptozoology event of the year. I've got another one in February, but we'll get to that when we get to that. And check out this list. It's ever expanding, ever growing at paranewsinsider.com. The events tab there at the top. And if you have any information about any event and want to see it on that list or hear it here on the show, let me know. Insider at paranewsinsider.com. Or you can click on the about/contact link there and get a hold of me through the contact form and let me know, hey, I got something going on. And I'll be happy to get that up on that website for you and help you out, get you a little traffic. It's what we're here for. No charge for that. It's complimentary. Best way to do it. Wow. That's it. We're done. I'm out of here. That's my new outro. Just kidding. Keep your eyes in the skies, your ears in the woods, and the hair standing on the back of your neck. And always keep your mind slightly ajar. And above all else, you know it. Don't ever stop believing. For the Paranormal News Insider, this is Dr. Brian D. Parsons reporting.
Listening to WCJV Digital Broadcasting, Youngstown, New York.